in accordance with Section 2C2 of the SLTX Plan of Operation. Notice of this meeting was published in the Texas Register on September 19th, 2025, in accordance with Chapter 551 of the Texas Government Code. Conference call-in number was provided to members of the public and the public notice. I will now call the roll to confirm the four members are participating in today's meeting. Jeff Klein, Vice Chair of the Board.
I'm present, thank you.
Peter Harrison.
Present.
Ezekiel Nathal.
Present.
Ryan Bridges via Teams.
Present.
Leah Bennett.
Present.
Jim Bishop.
Present.
Jason Cables.
Present.
And Nick Lawrence was unable to attend today's meeting. A quorum of five or more members is present pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.125B2 and Plan of Operations Section 2C6. The following stamping office management staff, council, consultants, and liaisons are present. Please affirm your attendance for the record when I call your name. Greg Brandon, Executive Director.
Present.
Toby Pick, Director of Policy Intake and Analysis.
Sure.
Yolanda Stone, Director of ITS.
Present.
Bonnie Ford, Director of Finance.
Present.
And Denise Amasquita, Director of Human Resources. Denise, will you please identify the additional stamping office staff members participating via Teams?
We have Ariel Rosario, Dalton Moore, Casper Vargas, Christian Porter, and Robin.
Thank you, Denise. Are there any liaisons or consultants attending online?
Paul Rennie, TSLA.
Thank you, Paul. Are any representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance, the Texas Comptroller, or legislative offices attending in person or by telephone?
Andrew, Director of Company Licensing.
Roberta Nordstrom, Office of Financial Counsel.
Thank you, and welcome. Before we get started, I have a few housekeeping item reminders. Antitrust activity or discussion are prohibited all stamping office functions. This prohibition includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspect of an individual company's operation. We will not have a public comment session. Public and media attendees listening by telephone should mute their lines at all times. Representatives of state agencies and members of the public are welcome to observe or record this board meeting, but please refrain from asking questions or interjecting comments during the board's deliberations. The state agency personnel present may be asked questions about their agency's policies if those questions relate to an agenda item. Members, council, and staff should identify themselves by full name when speaking. Please mute your microphone or telephone when not speaking. Agenda item two, discussion and appropriate approval of June 20, 2025 board meeting minutes. Everyone was provided a copy of the June 2025 meeting minutes. Are there any corrections? Any further discussion? There being no further discussion, do we have a motion to approve the June 20, 2025 minutes?
Move. Jeff Klein.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Ayes have it and the motion passes. Agenda item number three, discussion and appropriate action insurance policies. I will now open the floor to Mr. Greg Brandon, Executive Director, to present this agenda item.
Thank you, Leslie. Good morning, everyone.
We're going to start off with insurance programs. So just a reminder, the Plan of Operations Section 3A8 requires that the stamping office prepare a detailed summary of bonds and insurance policies and for review and approval by the board at the third quarterly board meeting and prior to or renewal. So all of our renewals happen either next month or in January. So I'm going to go through these. The first two programs, cyber liability the fine policy, they both renew in January. So you'll see this again at the December meeting with premium indications, but this is just part of part of the process. So we buy $5 million limits for cyber liability. You can see on the mud map, we've got a $3 million primary with a $50,000 deductible, and then $2 million in excess. So currently we're paying almost $60,000 in premium, and probably won't get renewal indications on that until sometime late November or December or January 2025 renewal. Oh, and the broker is Power Stone. So there's a couple of Marsh brokers, a couple of deals for Marsh MMA, and Power Stone are our two primary brokers. So next program is the crime policy. So this is a 3-year policy that expires in January. The broker's Marsh. Got a $500,000 limit, a $5,000 deductible. And there's an interesting coverage option is the Fidelity. So we use this instead of Fidelity bonds for some of our programs. You can see the current premium is $5,686. And just like the last one, we don't have premium indications on this. But I would expect it somewhat similar to where it is. Okay, so next slide is D&O. So this policy expires reversed. Our milestones are broken in. Current premium total is $43,129. And renewal premium proposals was $44,848. So we didn't propose or ask for any changes in coverage. So still side A, side B, side C. Employment practices liability is included in there. Fiduciary liability is sublimited to $1 million. And there is no drop down from the Evanston participant. And the prior litigation date is August of. Coverage wise, I think that's there's really no changes being sought. Stratford did offer us a renewal of $18,429 to take a $10,000 deductible on the fiduciary liabilities, but a $196 discount didn't seem to be appropriate for taking on $10,000 of risk. So our total premium is up $1,719 or 4%, with $670 in the primary and $1,040 in. Moving on to the next, professional lives, Arizona emissions coverage renewals came in up $1,457 or 14%. So a pretty hefty bump after 3 straight years of flat renewal. This is largely rated on revenue. So Admiral Insurance has been fairly reasonable with us over the years as we cut our fees a couple of times, and they patiently waited for our revenues to smooth out. And so now our revenue projection, you guys know this better than any revenue projections, continue to go up. And frankly, Admiral felt like it was time to catch up on this. So current program has a $1 million limit and $2,500 and a retro date going back to August of 2007, and we're not seeking any changes to the coverage limits. Next program is business owners insurance. That current policy expires October 7th. The broker is Marsh MMA. Current premium is $6,839. The renewal premium quote is $6,803. And that's primarily because the replacement values have gone up a little bit. So they were increased by, I believe, 6%. So there's a $1 million limit there and $5,000 deductible. No changes or addition to coverage. And the replacement value, replacement value was adjusted upward 6% since the last renewal. Next program is workers' compensation. No real change here. The current premium is $1,901. The renewal premium is $1,900. Broker is Marsh. Policy expires October 7th. And you do see we do have a $1 million limit for employment, our employer's liability.
Right. Does that cover people working from home?
Yes. So no real change here, right? This workers' compensation is rated payroll. So that it changes every year. We get audited. Payroll gets audited every year by this company. So there's no real change you can propose to a workers' compensation program. So any questions or any questions and any concerns from any of the other?
Have these all been found?
No. So as part of what we'll do today is I'll ask for your permission. So these are all just proposals. So I kind of made the decision for you. I just felt like a $196 discount wasn't worth taking on $10,000 risk. So I did not include that in the proposal. I'm happy if you guys would prefer that we go pursue that, we can certainly do it. But that's not a great discount for $10,000. I thought I could make that decision for you. Okay, so that concludes my presentation. If there's no other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brandon. Is there any discussion or questions for Mr. Brandon regarding the insurance program overview this time? Mr. Brandon, do you have a recommendation for a board motion at this time regarding the insurance program overview?
I do. I recommend that the board approve the proposed insurance programs and grant me the authority to finalize and purchase the coverage.
Make the motion.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor from Ryan Bridges.
Jason Cables will second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? No. So motion, I guess it's a motion passing, right, Brandon? I mean, correct. Greg, Mr. Brandon is... Okay. All right. So agenda item.
Dad here?
Right.
Mr. Brandon.
Okay. Gotta have a little levity going on. Okay. Agenda item 4, executive director report and appropriate actions. I open the floor to Mr. Greg Brandon, executive director, to present company overview presentation. Kind of funny. We've got some discussion items here going first for this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, excuse me. So, as you know, I like to start off with the org chart, and in this particular meeting, I want to acknowledge the entire industry. They offered overwhelming care and support to the organization with the loss of Cheyenne back in June. And we are certainly all thankful for that. It was really, really an experience for everyone, and the care and support that we got from the entire insurance community was unbelievable. So very, very thankful for that. But now what you're seeing here, this is the result of the loss of Cheyenne. So we had to reorganize the org chart a little bit and reallocate a couple of employees. First and foremost, you can see over on the left, Toby was promoted to the director of policy intake and analysis. So congratulations, Toby. It's a well-deserved promotion. And I will say this, Cheyenne was frankly irreplaceable. Her knowledge, skills, and abilities cannot be duplicated. So we didn't try. We don't have a new director of operations, and we split all of this up. And so Toby very graciously took on, I would say, the bulk of what an operations director does. And we split everything else up and reassigned it. So I'll go through that as well. I'm sorry, I don't have the pointer. But you can see right next to Toby's name is, or right next to Chantel's name is Christian. Christian is our senior data analyst. He drew the short straw and will report directly to me. I'm super excited about that because I think we've got a lot of opportunity for data analysis going forward. As you'll see, the volume of data continues to just pour into this organization. And so Christian is a data scientist, and I, back in the day, used to be an engineer. So we have a lot of fun discussions about math and probability and stuff like that. So unfortunately for him, he now reports directly to me. And then in addition to that, Sholanda's group has grown fairly considerably. So you can see down at the bottom, Sharmila took over the UAT. So that's user acceptance testing. So if you look at all the developers that we have there, there's that's not, with the exception of Cheyenne, there's no human being on the planet that can handle all of that UAT. And so Sharmila is leading that, but everybody has a role in user acceptance testing because the developers, frankly, can just overwhelm one human being with all of the new stuff that we can put into Smart. So Sharmila leads that effort, but there's plenty of people that finger and then finally, Ariel was, I'm sorry, not finally, but also Ariel was moved over from Toby's organization, and she is a business analyst. So best way to characterize that role is Ariel is the liaison between the technical and the non-technical. So it is a highly technical thing to develop Smart, but it is also a intended for non-technical users, right? They don't want to have to know. They just know, hey, I want Smart to be able to do this. And so that is Ariel's role, is to communicate non-technical and technical and get them to eventually match up. And then finally, you can see Yuba under Ronnie. So Yuba, he kind of split time between handling financial stuff as well as analyzing new carriers, insurers for eligibility. And so that has been moved under Ronnie. So certainly thankful to both Yuba and Ronnie. Ronnie got to be here for 3 months while I started piling more stuff. and they have done an outstanding job of really kind of fine tuning the financial analysis of our carriers. So looking forward to a lot of growth in that area as well. So the organization has been shuffled a little bit, but everybody has taken on a small piece of what Cheyenne used to do. And I'm certainly grateful to everyone who you see on this organizational chart for being so willing and capable of taking on the new roles and new assignments. We all kind of grew a little bit and are all learning something new amongst ourselves. So it's been very beneficial to the organization to be able to reorganize and restructure and continue down the path. And we all know that Cheyenne would be very proud of us for the way we've accommodated all of this work. Okay, so let's move on.
Can I interrupt you for just 1 second? We've had someone join on online with a 737 number. Can you please identify yourself? Hello? Yeah. You just came on with a phone number beginning with 737. Can you please identify who you are?
Yeah, I'm Caitlin Beam from TCA.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Hey, Kate.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. So we couldn't figure out who it was.
Next slide, please. I'll get down to business. So moving on to year-to-date premium, you can see premium through August, $1.5 billion. That's an increase of 12.8% for the year. August, however, compared to last year, the premium reported was down 5.6%. So that was kind of an unusual thing. This is the first decline in monthly premium versus the prior year since March of 2024. Next slide. So on item count, similar story. Year-to-date item count is almost 931,000 through August, which is up about 6% for the year. However, August was slightly down 0.3%, which is just a couple of hundred items compared to last year at this time. So similar story in both item count and premium. And then last slide is policy count is not following the trend entirely. Still up to almost 628,000 policies, 15% for the year. Now, August was down compared to the last few months. You can see for the last 4 months, we had over 80,000 policies per month. And August slipped just under that this year, but still up 11% compared to the year prior. So policy count, for lack of a better way to describe it, is way up compared to previous years. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Greg. Is there any further discussion or any questions on this item? Mr. Brandon, do you have recommendations for the board at this time?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you very much. Agenda item number five, policy intake director report and appropriate action. Mr. Kobe Pick, I call on you at this time to present the policy intake director report.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. Today, I'll be sharing an update on the surplus lines top five coverages for 2025 year to date, a comparison to 2024, and the monthly late filing premium amounts for 2025 year to date. And then I'll close with some highlights from ops team. So this, I think you want. Yeah. So this chart is the top five coverages comparison. Okay. So looking at the top five coverages, commercial, fire, and allied lines remains the largest category at 3.86 billion in 2025, slightly down from 2024, which was 3.97 billion. Excess and umbrella has grown significantly from 1.84 billion to 2.29 billion. General liability rose from 1.28 billion to 1.39 billion, and commercial property package and GL increased from 510 million to 613 million. And then commercial auto liability rose from 459 million to 521 million. Overall, we're seeing strong growth in most categories, just particularly in the excess and umbrella category. On to our late filing premium. So here we have the monthly late filing premiums for 2025 through August. January was the highest month at 183.6 million. Followed by April at 160.5 million. June was the lowest month at 33.5 million. And when we add all these together, year to date total is 840.6 million. This shows the significant scale of the late filing premiums and highlights the importance of our close coordination with the Texas Department of Insurance in managing and reviewing these filings. I've also built a really good working relationship with Andrew Carrero, so I appreciate you. And we work carefully each month, and we review, like, case by case, all of the late filing adjustment requests together. So this is takes like research and time. I just want to try to emphasize that we don't just pass through quickly. Like, we definitely take time and discuss. So our teamwork ensures the compliance and accuracy throughout the course of this. And then lastly, I'll just give some operations team updates. Our operation team continues to be the cornerstone of success. In July, we celebrated 1 year anniversaries for our newest team members. That'd be Robin Porter, Ruben,
right.
Yes. And Jennifer Dickey. Very proud of all of them. They are preparing to take on new responsibilities with training on data entry checked work process. We continue to provide excellent customer service and are basically trying to be subject matter experts in Texas surplus lines filings. And we also do collaborate with the IT team on smart UAT tickets. And this keeps us aligned, on system improvements with SMART. I also wanted to point out that my two policy analyst leads, Chantel Jackson and Kathy Hull, have been working really hard with our vendor for our videos, Lemon Light. And I just want to say I'm very proud of them. They've taken ownership and really have moved forward and been able to pick up where Cheyenne kind of went on. So I appreciate everybody's time, and that's the end of my presentation.
Much and congratulations on your position. Is there any further discussion or any questions at this time for Mr. Pick? Mr. Pick, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
I do not.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 6, ITS Director Report and Appropriate Action. At this time, we have Shalonda Stone to present the record.
Before we get into all the work, I just want to acknowledge that the ITS team, we've been through a little bit of change. But I am very appreciative of everybody's flexibility with the changes that we've gone through. It's a big difference between me doing smart and Cheyenne doing smart. We're very close friends, but we are not the same person. So the way I look at things is a little bit different than what everybody's used to, but we have been doing good, and I will give lots of kudos to our amazing developers, because as we've been jumping to hoops to make some changes, they have been excellent with getting those changes done. And I'm so appreciative of all of them. And I'm super glad that we have our development in-house and not outside, because that would not be a good look right now. But I do want to acknowledge that Ariel came over to us from operations, and she is our business analyst, and she is doing an amazing job. And I'm super excited that she's part of the IT team. We made some changes with Sharmila came over from operations too, and we have her as a UAT lead. So we are, you know, incorporating those changes into our team. But I'm super excited that those two are now on we call it the dark side over here. But I'm super excited that they're on our side of on the ITS side of things. A little bit different. I normally go over a lot of statistics. This time I'm going to focus on smart, because I don't think we've had a good smart update in a while. On the screen is the actual number of tickets that we have in smart from either completed or not completed. This has been for the life of the project, and I don't know if we've ever seen like all the numbers or all the tickets presented. But this is the work that our developers is working on currently. We have, well, this is post some of the changes that we did. We had 973 tickets that are still currently open that needs work done. That does not include the tickets that are in UAT, ready for UAT, tickets that need to be reworked. Those are just open tickets in backlog. On the screen is just a summary of all the tickets in the system completely, of where they are, and just general status overview. I don't know if we ever talked about, we use Jira to track everything. So we use Atlassian products online, their web versions of stuff to actually track all of our tickets. So this is where all of our work is housed. And go to the next one. So we have our current smart releases that we are in the middle of working on. 2505, we are done wrapping that up. Since we did the board presentation, the number changed slightly. We have, and 2505 basically focuses on technical debt and some search and edit functions. That's the bulk of it. For 2506, it focuses on the update and edit feature. We were doing good until we figured out there's an oopsie in there. So a lot of this is going to be rolled back. The update and edit feature, we're going to have to put a pause on to do some rework. We'll get with the operations team to talk to them and have a couple more meetings and iron out a few more things. So we have moved other things into the release for 2506, but 2506 is no longer the updated edit. And it was due to some wonderful UAT work from our developer, Rain. I will say she killed it on that. We had been doing testing, and she tested abnormalities in the system that should not have been put in, but she found some stuff. So we're just going to go back and rework. We'd rather put out a complete project that is sound and rock solid than put out something that's not working properly, and we have to go back and do a whole bunch of bug fixes and things like that. So we're just going to hold off on that for right now. Next one. And then the last thing that we did do it in the past, that we have not done it, with one of our meetings that we had, we figured out that, hey, we need some focus groups. So we will start doing smart focus groups, both internal and external groups. The main goals are up there. We just want to get feedback from all of our staff and external users that actually use Smart to figure out what's missing, what do they need, what functions do they want to see in the future, what functions work now that could work better. I don't believe that we've gotten that feedback for quite a bit of time. So I think it's time to start reaching back out and getting those focus groups started. My main goal of the focus groups is to keep them going. We will have them either quarterly or monthly, depending on the needs, depending on the feedback that we're getting from both our internal and external users. Currently, right now, we had our first focus group internally, and we talked about policy audit, which is a big subject here. So that was one of our first focus groups that we had. We have not established any external focus groups, but the plan, Denise is going to be sending out an article about it, and we're hoping that we get some feedback from it. I think Greg actually mentioned it in, I don't know what.
At the WSIA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He mentioned it.
One volunteer.
That's a start.
One is a start. So we did get one volunteer. So we're hoping to expand that to break it out into users that use that manually input into Smart. And we want to actually have another focus group for users who programmatically follow with Smart, so we can get both people listening to what they need, so we can kind of get kind of like a full understanding of what people's needs are. The benefits outweigh the benefits of this is great to me. I used to do focus groups and still do focus groups for VMware, even though we don't use it. They don't have anybody to run them in Austin, so I still run them for them in Austin. But the whole benefit of this is not to make Smart what we call an ecosystem, which is you're in the room and the only person you hear is yourself. You're not hearing everybody else. So we want to make sure that we are obtaining and listening to what everybody else needs, since Smart is going to be our evergreen system. We want to keep it going. We want to keep doing improvements on it. We don't want it stagnant. So this is the best way to accomplish those goals. That is all I have for you.
That's a great idea. Love that you're going back to do that. I have one question, if it's a layman's term of capability. So when you say we have an open ticket, like for those of us that don't, what does an open ticket mean for you?
Okay, so open ticket is a ticket that has not been worked. So it's worked. Let's say somebody comes up with an idea and say, hey, I want a report that shows me X, Y, and Z. So the criteria is typed up. The information is put into what we have is called Jira, and it's an open ticket until a developer touches it, until technical requirements are put in, until any work is done on it, it's considered to be an open ticket.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So why don't you go back to the original chart, the first chart? Because there's a lot of different ways to define a ticket, right? An open is just one of them.
Yeah. So we have tickets that are approved, tickets that are blocked. So blocked tickets are tickets that are waiting for something else to be developed. So let's say I need a pizza, but I don't have the crust yet, but I have the cheese and everything else. So I have to wait because I can't make my pizza because I don't have the main part of it, which is the crust of the pizza. So we have tickets that we cancel. So there's tickets that are ideas that we throw in there and we're like, who thought of that? So they get canceled out. There are tickets that are, we have closed. Closed tickets are tickets that have been either worked completely through UAT or now on the system, or they just been closed for various reasons. Code review are tickets that are have been worked by the developers, but they need a review of the code that the developers have worked. And then, decided, most of those are just tickets that we decided we're going to do. There's no technical requirements in there. There's just like basic information in there. They're still on the back burner. We're not going to not do them. They're just not high priority right now. In definition, that's tickets that are, we decided we're going to work them. They still need technical requirements. They still need some work done to them before they can actually be worked. In progress are tickets that are actually being worked by our developers. And then we have some open tickets. There's two versions of open. Open can be, hey, I have a ticket, I'm working on it, it's open. The other part of it is just open tickets that they're just sitting in backlog. They're waiting for somebody to look at. We have ready for alpha, which means it's ready to be put into our testing environment for people to start testing. Anything that's ready for UAT, which there are tickets that are done, completed, and they just haven't been tested. They haven't went through our user acceptance testing. To do is tickets that we're just waiting on. They just need to be, they're just in a hold pattern. Ready for production, those are tickets that are ready to go. We're just ready to complete the release. Most of those are in 2505, which is we're ready to do release. It may be one or two tickets that are still lingering out that we need to put in and wrap up to make it all a nice pretty bow before we put it out. Request approval, those are tickets that somebody requested or somebody had a bright idea that they wanted us to look at. We just haven't got to it yet. And then technical requirements, those are tickets that need other detail in the tickets for them to be worked.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Information. So is there any further discussion or other questions on this item for Ms. Stone? Ms. Stone, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
No, ma'am, I do not.
Thank you for your presentation. And agenda item number 7, Plan of Operation Committee Report. And I will now open the floor to Mr. Jeff Klein, committee chair, and joined by Greg Brandon, executive director, to present this agenda item. Klein?
Before we move forward, I want to have on the record that Jennifer Dickey, Ruben Olivares, and Chantel Jackson from SLTX have joined the call.
Okay, thank you.
I'm chair of the Plan of Operation Committee. I wanted to thank Pete Harrison not only for getting us to dinner last night in our car, but joining the committee at a time when we didn't have any other volunteers. And Brian Bridges for being kind with his time yesterday and joining the committee meeting. This was an important part of our agenda this week here in Austin, and we thank the TDI for extensive discussions leading up to completion of these amendments and the assistance of Mitchell Williams and Michael Norad in helping develop them. So thank you, Madam Chair. The Plan of Operation Committee, consisting of Pete Harrison, Ryan Bridges, and myself, met yesterday to review the amended Plan of Operation received from TDI. You know, Section 2C5 of the plan requires annual review of the plan at the March annual meeting. That document was submitted to TDI following that meeting, and the department recently got back to us with their feedback on the proposed amendments. So as a result of that, the committee reconvened yesterday to review the document. The materials are in the board packet. There are some technical changes, but several substantive changes throughout the amended document. And as Greg mentioned yesterday, these are intended to provide more flexibility as to how the board manages its organization and conducts the meetings. The changes are primarily for highlighted purposes, the following sections. Section 2A3 provides clarity, additional clarity that a board member's appointment expires at the end of the calendar year and a member may serve multiple terms. Section 2A5 provides flexibility in our annual training requirements by removing the requirement, which was pretty restrictive, to complete governance training prior to a board member's first meeting. We will still have governance training, but this makes a little more sense from a flexibility standpoint. Section 2A6 provides clarity to the requirement that the conflict of interest policy as an overall policy be reviewed by the TDI rather than just the conflict of interest statement. Section 2B4, so involves the hiring of the executive director and removes the requirement to notify the commissioner of the candidate selection and proposed offer terms 5 days prior to making an offer. Also removes the commissioner's discretion to terminate the executive director and vests that entirely in the context of the board itself. Section 2B5 adds clarity to the verbiage by indicating it is a financial audit, underscoring the word financial, as referenced in Section 3A3A. Section 2B7 adds clarity by removing the two timeline requirements of upon receipt, before adoption, in quotes, and states that the proposed budget must be referred to TDI before the board votes to adopt the budget. I think it's been our operations anyway. It clearly states that the adopted budget must be forwarded to Section 2C1 was changed to state all board meetings must comply with the Open Meetings Act. This provides much greater flexibility for the underlying committees to meet and discuss without risk of violating the act, such as violating the quorum requirements. Section 2C5B changes the annual plan review requirement to a biennial review starting in 2027. The old requirement was, as we discussed yesterday, for an annual review. We thought something more than 2 years would be too long and would make the plan stale. So we settled mutually on a biennial requirement. Section 2C10 was updated to ensure that the Finance Committee agenda be published, the Finance and Audit Committee be published on the SLT website 7 days prior to the meeting date. The Finance and Audit Committee, of course, has a higher standard than the committee I chair, and so we thought that that was necessary. This was done to ensure the public is aware of the meeting now that the changes to Section 2C1 does not require underlying committee meetings to comply with all aspects of the Open Meeting Act. There are several other minor changes throughout the document that we consider non-substantive, technical, grammatical. We support that as they add clarity to the document. And we look forward to this new plan going forward. With that, I wanted to give Greg an opportunity to comment.
Actually, you did a great job summarizing it. So that's, I look forward to sending this over to the commissioner for final review. Knock this one off the list, right? Mm-hmm. It was an annual requirement for so long, and it was quite challenging to keep up with. So I'm excited for the commissioner to give us final feedback.
Is there any discussion or questions for Greg or Jeff regarding the amended plan of operation? Mr. Klein, do you have a recommendation regarding the amended plan of operation?
Magically, I do. I recommend that the plan of operation as amended and reviewed today be resubmitted to TDI down the block for approval by the commissioner, the Texas Department of Insurance, in accordance with Section 1C of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation, as well as Section 981-153B of the Insurance Code, Chapter 15, Rule 201 of the Administrative Code of Texas.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion that the board submit the amended plan of operation as presented to the Texas Department of Insurance for approval by the commissioner in accordance with the Stamping Office Plan of Operation, the Texas Insurance Code, and the Texas Administrative Code?
Motion, Chief Bishop.
Do I have a second?
Second, Ezekiel Nassal.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, Ryan, get ahead of you. All opposed, say no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you. And moving on to agenda item 8, Finance and Audit Committee report. Jason Cables, committee chair, and Ronnie Ford, director of finance, present. At this time, I open the floor to Mr. Jason Cables and present the Finance and Audit Committee report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday, the Finance and Audit Committee, consisting of Ezekiel Nathal, Nick Lawrence, and myself, met yesterday afternoon to conduct our quarterly meeting as required by Section 2C10 of the Plan of Operations. During the meeting, we reviewed the year-to-date company finances as well as the proposed 2026 budget. We also discussed the option to conduct an RFP for audit services, ultimately decided against taking any action until next year, so it's been tabled for now. This is Ronnie Ford, Director of Finance, is here to review both of these items for the full board today. And at this time, I will turn over the floor to Ronnie to present all of the sub-items under agenda item 8.
Hey, everyone. I'm going to first start by going over the 2025 August financial results. Started off, stamping fees were under budget by 13%, which is $93,100. For August, and over budget around 3%, $152,708 year to date. Investment income was over budget 12%, or $12,812 for August, and over budget 13%, or $109,000 for the year. Which means we earned more on our investment than we projected. Total operating expense was under budget for August $110,000, or 70% and under by $742,960, or 11% for the year. Salaries, as you can see, was under budget by 19%, $73,638 for the month, and 11% or $508,000 year to date. Under budget due to lower than anticipated annual pension plan this last year, and we recently had some changes. Social service was under budget by 23%, $6,511 for August, and under budget by 6%, almost $17,647 year to date. And this under budget, we have not paid our 2024 tax services. We just completed the so we're going to get that invoice soon. Conference and education. Conference and education was over budget by 204%. Which is actually $7,200 or August, and 60% $43,851 for the year. This is mainly due to timing of budgeted conferences. Travel and entertainment were over budget by 43%, $117 for the month, and under budget by 65% or $46,923 for the year. And this pretty much that under budget is still the same thing as we talked about conference and education. It's just the time in it. Occupation and operation expense were under budget by $12,391, 44% for the month, and under $23,030, 8% for the year. This category that contributed to being under budget mainly was software, computer equipment, and and administrative expense were under budget by $22,425, 13% August, over budgeted by $137,009% year to date. Contingency expense were not used, resulted in $3,184 savings for the month and $33,786 for the year. We had about $187,000 operating income for August and $278,000 operating income year to date. We had budgeted for an operating income of $158,000 for the month and a loss of $727,000 through August. The change in investment value was an increase of approximately $131,738 for August and $213,643 increase year to date. Are there any questions right now on the overall finances? If not, then I can move on to the fund balance analysis. Fund balance analysis. On the plan of operations, section 2B7A, projected reserve expected for funds for assets replaces must not exceed 2 times the average of operating expense audited for the 5-year period immediately budgeted year. So the beginning fund balance, unrestricted undesignated funds in January of 2025 was $32.2 million. August year-to-date net income of $90,721 resulted in a fund balance of August 31st of $32.7 million, which is $18.2 million over current maximum. The projected year-end maximum fund balance is $32.4 million, still $14.5 million above the limit. Currently, we're $3.7 million over projected maximum fund balance. Are there any questions on the fund balance?
No further discussion, Ms. Ford. Move forward, but on 2025 state financial review. Oh, sorry, 2026 proposed budget. Thank you.
Proposed budget. Per section 384, and operations, the stamping office must submit a proposed budget for the stamping office operation and capital expenses and continue for the following calendar year to the Board of Audit Finance Committee. revenue has a 10% or 763,200 increase in staff and fee revenue because of our current staff and fees. Interest and other income increased 8% or 98,155 due to increases in interest rates this year, which invested maturities were realized. So our projected and overall increase in revenue was 171,684, which meaning that we're going to put it in 3.8% investment avenues. Budgeted sales and benefits increased by 21,465 for 2026. The increase in the budget is for 11% increase for all lines of health insurance coverage, which is offset by overestimate of 2025 pension budgeted and 2026 increase in 401k expenses. Professional service, 2% increase or 9,583 is due to increase in ADP fees and also One American fees, which is offset by increase in like Cyber 7 and professional service, 4% of total budget. Conference and education is a 4% increase and remain 1% of budget. Increase is primarily due to adding one additional Microsoft training. Travel expenses decreased by 2% or $2,300 for 2025 and remain 1% of the budget. Decreases due to SLT board meeting reduction from six to five. And we also had like 5,000 reduction in travel for HR. Occupation and operation expense, an increase of 4% or 14,106, which includes IT software increases. Then general and administrative decreased by 41% or 846,057. This includes amortization decrease of 44%, which mainly is due to our smart releases, as well as we have depreciation increases also, 1,000. Contingency decrease of 3,993% in expenses. Our contingency decreased because of our expenses. Total 2026 expense are projected to decrease 8% or $803,689 over 2025. Overall, the budget predictions and operation income is $656,624 for 2026, or as opposed to a loss of $1,840,021 for 2025, a change of about $1,665,040 or 165%. Are there any questions on the budget items?
Madam Chair, for Ronnie or Greg, is there enough money in the budget for conference and training staff with all the changes in the industry? We're doing okay with that?
Yes. Yes. Any other questions? Or do you have a recommendation for a board motion at this time regarding the 2026 proposed
budget as presented to the Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation, TDI, in accordance with Section 2B7 of the Surplus Line Staffing Office Plan of Operations.
Thank you. Is there a motion that the board refers the 2026 proposed budget as presented to the Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division, TDI, in accordance with Section 2B7 of the Surplus Line Staffing Office Plan of Operation?
Yes, thank you.
First with Mr. Jason Cables and a second Ryan Bridges. Is that correct?
That works.
Great. All right. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you very much, Ms. Ford, for your presentation. Now we have discussion, appropriate action, 2026 financial auditor proposal. I will turn the floor again to Mrs. Ford for this discussion. We're done with that? It's an honor.
Table that whole thing. We'll make sure.
Okay, we're good with that. Okay, apologize. is on here. Okay, so that is that's our final item for discussion today. So we'll open the floor. Is there any other business that the board would like to address? The only thing I would like to address is maybe looking at dates for December. Everybody looking at your calendar, because we know December is always a little difficult for everyone, and then also knowing that we can do it Teams as well. So I just think it's something as we're all sitting here together. So
yes, so generally with the December meeting, we try to split the difference between Thanksgiving holiday and Christmas holiday. So just looking at my calendar, typically we do it on a Friday, so that's either the 12th or the 19th. So certainly don't have to decide today. You can go back and look at your calendars and let us know what day works the best for you. Either one of those will work, but the longer you give us, the more likely it is that we're going to have the financial book closed for November. So the later we can get, the 12th is pretty tight to get the books closed and finished up, but we can do it.
Okay.
It's kind of easy for me to voluntold. Ronnie can do it.
Got it? 12 for you. Yeah. How's a 6 look? Okay.
Yeah, she runs from the 8th through the 11th in South Florida, so any of those dates would work for somebody.
So, all right.
Well, that's the other thing. It does not have to be on Friday.
That's true, too.
You guys can do it's your calendar, right? Your volunteers. I want you to, whatever we can do to accommodate you is what we're going to do. So if you want to decide on the date now, that's fine. If you'd rather go back and look at your calendar and talk to your teams about, because the other thing we have in December in particular is you usually have your organization will have a holiday party as well. And so that's another thing we've got to navigate. You may not necessarily know your holiday party date. So I want to give everybody the opportunity, and I certainly don't want to step on that either.
So just food for thought. And so we can start at least getting it on the books, and then Ronnie can know what she's got ahead of her. So are there any other topics of discussion not on the agenda? Okay. There being no other business before the board, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Move, Mr. Klein.
Second.
Mr. Harris. We have a first and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The ayes have it, and the meeting is adjourned at, what time are we? 9:59, September 26th, 25. Thank you for your attendance.